Welcome to Troweling Down, Biblical Archaeology for the 21st Century. I'm Gary Byers, this is Dr. Stephen Collins, and normally this month we would be in Jordan.
We would be, as we had been for the last 16, 17 years.
Yep.
Yes, in Jordan, of course, winter here, but in Jordan it would still be winter, but down in the valley, just north of the Dead Sea, 1,300-ish feet below sea level, even if it was snowing in Albuquerque or snowing up in Amman in Jordan, we'd be down there in short sleeves.
And hopefully we'd be staying at the Movenpick, and we'd be right there on the Dead Sea, and we'd stay in short sleeves all day long.
Yep. And so that's why we excavated in the winter.
Yes.
Because in that same location, starting in April, May, June, it's over 100 every day, well over 100, even in the 110, 120 degree range. So that's not good excavating weather.
No.
So wintertime, you take your chances with a little rain here and there, but for the most part, the weather was very good to us over 16 dig seasons.
Yep, worked well. It worked well for us. Okay, well, we're looking at our little menagerie here of stuff. This is melted pottery and mud brick, and this is what we found. More than this, but everything wasn't done like this. It was just certain things that got this particular exposure.
Yeah.
And what you said last time was incredible heat, over 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit, maybe even up to 15,000 to 20,000 degrees Fahrenheit for just a second, and very directional. That's what this was.
Yes.
So everything we found wasn't like that. In fact, most pieces weren't. But we did keep finding this kind of stuff.
And it's kind of like sunburn. It's very directional.
Yeah.
You know, if you're out golfing and you are bald and you don't have a hat, guess what'll get sunburned?
Yep.
Why? Because the rays are coming from that, the radiation is coming from that direction.
Yeah.
I knew a guy, it was back in junior high or high school, he went out to sunbathe, fell asleep on his stomach, and scorched the bottom of his feet.
Scorched the bottom of his feet.
Sunburned the bottom of his feet so bad he couldn't hardly walk for weeks. But anyway, what does that tell you? It tells you that it's directional. Tops of his feet didn't get burned.
Yeah.
Only what was exposed to the directionality of the radiation.
Yeah.
Now, that's exactly what we have going on here.
Yeah.
Now, this is a little bit more than sunburn. We're talking about tens of thousands of degrees of a burst of heat, which only lasted a fraction of a second, maybe a millisecond, and did the kind of melting that you see here. Now, of course, everything across the site, across the city, and across the area doesn't get turned into glass, doesn't get melted, doesn't get subjected to the same heat for two reasons. First of all, it has to be maximally exposed.
Mm-hmm.
Has to be facing that surface, has to be facing the right direction so that it maximizes the directionality of the heat event itself. The second thing is, it's not just a heat event. It's an explosive event, concussive, explosive event that literally pulverizes mud brick, pulverizes people, pulverizes pottery, pulverizes things, churns it up, breaks it, stirs it up, and after the event, everything just lands in a nasty, churned up, ashy, burned matrix.
So, like on this piece of pottery, it was first broken, the vessel was broken, and then it melted over the edge of the break, and this is all happening just instantaneously, and so some pieces
and it could be melting and breaking at the same time.
Melting
and breaking at the same time.
That's right. Yeah, melting and breaking at once. Okay, so how many things we have colleagues that say, oh, I find that kind of a thing in my dig site all the time. Melted stuff was that, then that no big deal. We all have had that, the destructions or in a pottery kiln. Just talk to us about how terrestrially that can be done.
I'm fine for somebody to say that to me, as long as they have done the level of analysis that we have accomplished in order to get the results that we see here. Somebody stood up. I did a presentation on this this phenomenon at ASOR a couple of years ago. And one guy, archaeologist, I assume, because most everybody there is, and stood up and said, well, these look like the same kinds of things we find at our site. I asked him, how many boiled zircons do you have identified from your site? I said, by the way, a zircon boils at about 3,900 degrees Celsius, over 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit. And he just sat down. Because he didn't have any. I promise you, he didn't have any. Because we're talking about a temperature that's hotter than the surface of the sun. And these kind of temperatures are not present on the terrestrial surface. Yeah. Magma, and I've mentioned this before, volcanic magma is melting and flowing at about 1,800 to 2,200 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay, so that's what we've got here. And that came from world-class scientists. And then not only did those folks get the ball rolling, but it was through those folks that we connected with a group that's been working with us now for, I guess, maybe 10 years, mm-hmm. on the ground and then back in their labs with their electronic microscopes. And by the way, I don't know if you know this, it's really hard for a scientist to get time on an electronic microscope.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes they would say, what are the results this time around on this sample of that? Well, we're still waiting. We're in the queue to use this particular electron microscope that we like to use or whatever. But anyway, so it takes time. It's a slow process. But also these scientists were they were coming out to our site and the region around our site, taking their own samples.
Yeah.
Now we're having to say, okay, you know, this is the Middle Bronze layer and above it is this layer and below it's this layer. So they were taking samples above and through and below and out in the countryside around. So they're doing their due diligence to make sure that they have all the control sampling done and all the specific sampling done that they want analyzed from our destruction layer. And they've done a fabulous job.
And they don't care about what our destruction layer means. They're not interested in the fact that we're tying this to a particular place and a particular event at that place. They don't care about that. They're just doing their scientific stuff, and what do you know, it really does fit together.
And most of the people, and there are about 21 of them, 21 scientists, and most of whom are not, if I can use this terminology, are not faith-based people.
Yeah.
In fact, some of the lead astrophysicists on it said, you know, I have no dog in that fight. I'm really not a Bible person. I'm really not a religious person. I just care about explosive cosmic events that cause this kind of damage and these kinds of phenomena.
Yeah.
So that's what we're interested in. We're interested in the science. And they say, oh, by the way, because NASA is going to ask us what it looks like when something like this happens to an urban area.
And this is the first.
Yeah, and this is the first.
This is the first time they got to see that.
Yeah, first time that they're actually able to analyze an ancient city that gets hit by one of these events. And they're telling me, NASA's bugging us to know. They want to know what kind of impact this is. Can this happen? Is it going to happen? And they basically tell them, well, yeah, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Eventually, at some point, the Earth, bless her heart, has been smacked many times over the millennia. And there's a lot of space, big pieces of space rocks and stuff floating around out there, moving at tens of thousands of miles an hour and could do the kind of damage we're looking at. But they were so interested in ours because this was the first time that this kind of event that we know of has occurred over a heavily populated urban center.
And we've talked to now you got to hear personal presentations by two colleagues, archaeological colleagues, who have also excavated airburst evidence, one in Syria and one here in North America.
Yes, one at the what's called the Younger Dryas boundary, an airburst or a series of airbursts that occurred within a very short frame of time that left literally a black mat about that thick all around the globe, it now appears, that that did away with the megafauna that we think so much about, the mammoths and all of that, and caused a massive extinctions, and also did away with the Clovis culture here in America. And so, yes, there have been those who've studied what happened to human culture in that boundary, and what they were doing before, what they had to quit doing because what they were relying on to eat, that world they were relying on, was no longer existing. And now they had to step up to the plate and invent something else, a new way of living. So we have people that are studying, that have studied that totally independently of us. And also that these events, this kind of event, has also impacted significantly Native American culture in the eastern part of the United States back about 1,500 years ago. And that's Ken Tankersley's study of the Hopewell culture.
Yeah.
And so these events do happen. They do happen. And this particular one, the evidence, a little tiny bit of the evidence of which we're looking at here, happened at Tal el Hamam, where it, all of its surrounding towns and villages and satellites, were wiped out toward the end of the Middle Bronze Age, around 1700 BC, that it came to an abrupt end. It killed everything, everybody, melted pottery, destroyed mud bricks, literally pulverized so much of the landscape, completely probably eliminated all the topsoil, the agricultural soil, so much so that no real settlements, agricultural-based settlements, could return to the area for about 700 years, which is kind of remarkable.
So so this was one thing that was going on starting in 2005 when we started our excavation at Tal el Hamam, began to find this was our first piece. So then, beyond that, you had been, in your search for Sodom, you had a friend and colleague who started talking to you about airbursts. Now, did he say to you about airburst? Well, you know what I'm talking about. You know what I mean.
He probably did. Probably.
So tie that part in for us, and when that fit into your story, and when this big picture began to really flesh out.
Well, I don't, and he doesn't hide the fact that we are biblically astute people.
Yeah.
We read the Bible. We've been studying it for decades and decades and decades. We read the text, we try to figure the text out, we try to figure the geography out, we try to deal with all of that. And so, yes, we're familiar with the story of Genesis chapter 19, how fire, and sometimes translated brimstone, really burning stone, came out of the heavens and destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah and all the cities of the plain. We know that story. And Dr. John Moore came to me one day, and he said, you know, I think there's something going on here. I want you to think in these terms. He said, do you know anything about airburst events? And I said, not really. And at that point, we're talking about back in 2002, 2003, 2004. And I said, no, I don't. Well, he said, you need to read this. So he handed me a stack of papers from Scientific American, and a bunch of papers on airbursts that had been studied by many folks. And said, you need to come up to speed on this. So here's some of the key articles, and you need to read these. Okay, so I read them. And then later we got to talk, and he said, now, with that, now that you've kind of given yourself a primer on airbursts, does not Genesis 19 sound like an airburst? And you have to admit,
Yeah,
what other event is there in the universe where fire, burning stone and fire come out of the heavens and consume something on the landscape? That's an airburst, if I ever heard of one.
Yeah.
And so what John determined and what I agreed with was that the language of Genesis 19 sounded remarkably like an ancient person, non-scientific person, trying to describe the experience of an airburst event destroying a civilization.
So this was happening even before the Tullahoma excavation had gotten into play.
Yeah.
So you felt like you'd identified the right site, and that was what we excavated.
But
find
it started
out.
Even earlier than that. I mean, it purely started as a geographical exercise.
Yes.
We were in the middle, when I really started the research, we were pretty much in the middle of the Kerbet El Mekater excavation. I wasn't looking for a project.
Right.
But I was interested in this thing about, well, where is Sodom located? So when Kerbet El Mekater in 2000 had its last season, kind of the Intifada was a little bit dicey at that point, so decided to shut it down. Then all of a sudden, whoa, wait a minute, now we got to do something. What are we going to do? Oh, I turned to the geography of Sodom. And so it was purely a geographical exercise. I still really wasn't looking for an excavation project. I was just really trying to analyze the geography and then go to Jordan, get on the ground, look at all the possibilities, and spend time there working with the landscape itself, working in the landscape.
So with this Sodom focus, John Moore suggests that you read this stuff, and then he makes this connection for you. So that's all happened before we put our first spade in the ground.
Yeah.
When did this all begin to fit together? You know about the biblical text, you know about airbursts, and then these guys are telling you about this stuff. Tell us a little bit about that as we close today.
Well, nothing surprises you. You can't really say that anything in an archaeological excavation totally surprises you, because number one, you don't know what to expect.
Yeah.
And so we ran into some things that really forced our hand. We had to say, what's going on here? So next time, why don't we talk about that? What did the archaeology tell us that forced us to continue this investigation further?
All right. So this is Troweling Down Biblical Archaeology for the 21st Century at Tull El Hammam in Jordan. And we found a bunch of stuff that looks like there was a cosmic airburst took place at our site. We found it archaeologically. We think we found it in the Bible. And so that's all exciting stuff. We got more to say about it. Join us next time.